A new sermon series called Life on Mission. To give us a good visual of it, not only do you get that cool little video with the music that should have pumped you up, but also we put new banners up around the room as well that cover some of this theme. The quotes on every single one of these banners are words that were spoken by Jesus. While there are many words around us, there is one of these banners here that we Christians, we're really good at talking about liking, and we kind of like it a lot, kind of to the exclusion of others sometimes, to be honest. This one right here, it says, "Come follow me." And I know not everyone in the room can get a great view of it, but we have a really goofy-shaped room, and so that's the best I could do. this one over here, "Come follow me." We really like that one because it's an invitation by God to lead us, which is pretty cool. It just is. Who doesn't want God to lead them? Who doesn't want Jesus to lead them? At least on a surface and conceptual level, like nearly everybody is happy with God leading them in their lives. Like at least on a surface level, few people, especially anybody gathered here today, few people are not going to like the words in that banner. Jesus didn't cuss, so yeah, follow him and don't act like a proverbial sailor. Jesus didn't punch people in the face, so yeah, follow him. Don't punch people in the face. Jesus wasn't a big jerk, so follow him. Don't be a big jerk. I mean, that command where we often like, but look around the room there. There's a whole lot more words than just those three. And these are all things that Jesus said to his followers as well. There's a lot more words than to the concept of following Jesus than just the general idea of following him, right? There is. These words around there over that. Because when you follow someone, you're like doing the same things they did, like you're tracing their footsteps, right? If you're following someone, I followed Craig a lot this weekend because he drove up to Shiloh and we caravaned and I was behind him. There's one point I forgot to follow him because I was talking to the people in my car and I realized he's behind me getting off the exit. And so, yeah, following someone entails knowing what's going on and being aware of the person you're following, right? And doing what they do, it involves that. And so we have to ask, if we're following Jesus, he's taking us somewhere, right? So we have to ask, where is he taking us? Where are the goals? Where is this journey heading? And of course, a lot of people say heaven. I mean, heaven is obviously the ultimate goal of where we're following Jesus to. But if that's the only goal, though, why are you still breathing? If that's the only goal of following after Jesus, then why doesn't he just like rapture us as soon as we start following him? Because that'd be a whole lot easier on both of our parts if that was the only reason why he saves us, right? There's a whole lot of stuff I wouldn't mind skipping. I mean, obviously there's some other reason why we're here besides just getting to heaven. There's some other reason why we're following him, right? I mean, he did some things besides just ascend to heaven during his time on earth, and so maybe we should follow him during that. So surely we have another mission. And so what is that mission? We've got to ask ourselves, I've got a mission? I have a mission? What? Life has a mission? With a question mark there. And it's not just going to heaven or else we wouldn't be here. And it's not just finding comfort in life either. It's not just finding comforts on earth. Jim Carrey, of all people, I knew you came to church thinking the preacher would be quoting Jim Carrey, but he, of all people, said this. He said, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer." He said that. And he's got more money than I think a lot of people in this room. And he said comfort's not the answer either. And going to heaven's obviously not the only answer because we're still around. And it'd be a whole lot easier to just not be around and just go straight to heaven. But so there's something more, right? There's something else. There's some other components of following Jesus besides just getting to the ultimate destination. I really wish we had teleportation. That would have been great for a four-hour car drive yesterday, but there's a process there. There's other things along the way. And so before I tell you all the mission, and before I list some of the steps and things like that, I have a few things to ask of you all. Number one, I ask you to be here for the sermon series. We're actually only going to cover one step a Sunday, and so you want to get all the steps because it's really hard to like follow step four if you skip steps like one, two, and three, or like if you don't know what step two is, maybe step three is going to be way harder or even impossible to do. So it helps to be here, be committed to being here and getting all the steps. Number two is be in a life group. Our life groups are going to be following the same material that I'm covering today in a different format, in a smaller format where you can actually like discuss it and hear other people. Another teacher on video will be teaching the lessons, and so it'll just be a good way to get it hammered into our heads a little better, because repetition is important, right? And so, and other formats are important too, instead of just someone lecturing to you like this pretty much is. It's just, we learn better in different ways as well. And so, join a group. But speaking of repetition, there's also a book on the subject too, called Life on Mission. I'd really like it if you got the book and read through it as well. There's about four books, though, called Life on Mission, so don't just Google it and buy the first one you see. The one we're covering, the same material that I'm borrowing some material from and we're covering in the life groups we'll be on, is the one written by a guy named Tim Harlow. I have a few copies of the book, so if you'd like a copy, you can see me, or you can just order it yourself. But Tim Harlow is the one. He also went to school with Craig, and so Craig can tell you all about what he was like in college, maybe. But yeah, so someone our worship leader knows and has met with is the guy who wrote this book. And so there's at least a little bit of safety there in reading his book, right? I've read it. It's good. And so make sure you do that. All right, so I want you to be here. Be here on every Sunday. It's important just to gather with other Christians, too. I want you to join a life group. I want you to read the book. The last one is the most important thing of the stuff I'd like us all to do, and that's just be open. Be, like, willing to actually, like, consider these things and possibly do them. Perhaps God is calling you to something through all these lessons or life group meetings or our book material. I hope he's calling you to do something through my preaching. I mean, I really like to hear myself talk, but not so much that I just get up in front of people and speak for no reason. And so maybe, no, I don't think so. Hopefully there's a reason for you hearing the words that I'm saying. Hopefully there's some meaning to that, and you can take that in and do something with it, I hope. So relax, be willing to hear from God when I read in the scriptures, or be willing to at least consider what we're talking about here as potential things. All right, those are the steps. Agree to all of them. I know not everyone's going to do every single one of those, but do consider them. Join life group, read the book, make sure you're here, and be open. At least get a few of those things. But now let's go back to these banners. Back to these banners around the room. They've all got words of Jesus written on them. A lot of them are, in fact, actually his last recorded words in any given book, in many of the books that these words are found in. And when you're writing a book about someone and the last words you have them speaking before you finish the book, those are usually, like, important words, right? They're usually, like, the most important often. If you're writing, like, a biography about someone and the last words you want on the page from that person, it's usually, like, important, unless it was a very non-eventful life of this person. But Jesus had an eventful life, and so these are important words here. In fact, I might just say that these words are our mission in life. These words are our mission. I mean, heaven is the goal, but our mission are these words written around us on these banners. To explain, I'm just going to focus on one of the phrases that are written on these banners. Instead of just all of them, they all say roughly the same thing, but in different metaphors, besides the come follow me, which is the general one. This one, the one I'm going to talk about, is this one right here. I know it's behind the piano / accordion / keyboard, depending on your perspective. But again, it's a really weirdly shaped room, and so that's the best I could do. And so, you will be my witnesses is right there. That is from Acts 1:8. Let me go ahead and read the whole verse there. It's not that much longer. Jesus was talking here. He says, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth." Okay, so Jesus' followers there, according to this verse, are supposed to be witnesses. We see that. And this is also Jesus' final words in the book of Acts. In the book of Acts, he says these, and then he stops talking, and his followers take over from there. And he also said this not just to his apostles. It's not like these were for super people. He said this to all of his followers that were gathered there. So all of his followers are supposed to do these things, and he says, "You will be my witnesses." Not, "You probably should be my witnesses," but he said, "You will be my witnesses." And what does a witness do? Testify. What is testifying? Telling what you saw. A witness shares the information that they know about a specific thing, right? That's what witnesses in court do. They don't get up there and make stuff up, because that wouldn't be good. Maybe some do. But the good witnesses don't. And so they get up there and they share what they know. They share what they've experienced. They share what they've seen. Or maybe you've got special witnesses that share what they've studied. And so you be a witness, and who's witness? In this case, it's Jesus' witness, so share about Jesus. And where does he say to do it? He says, in Jerusalem, in Judea, and Samaria, and to the end of the earth. And that's like, I don't know if I want to go to Jerusalem, and Judea, and Samaria. Like, have you seen the news recently? Like, those aren't happy places on earth right now, in many of those areas over there. But is that what Jesus is telling us to do, though, is go to the Middle East when he tells us this? He was actually talking to people who were standing in Jerusalem, when he said this. And they were in the country of Judea, and their next door neighbor was Samaria. And so he's telling you, do stuff right where you are. And go to the end of the earth, yeah, go to reach the country, reach your neighbors, reach the ends of the earth. But where does he say first is exactly where you're standing, guys, is where I want you to be my witnesses, is what he's telling. So in context to us today, you might say he's saying, be a witness to where you're standing right now. Be a witness to the state you live in. Be a witness to your neighbor, to the city next door, just down the road. Go there. That is your mission, to be witnesses for those places. And so that's the answer to our first question today, our question today. It's, I have a mission? And the answer is, yeah, I have a mission. Exclamation point, not just question mark. It's like, yeah, I got a mission. I've got stuff to do here. And honestly, isn't it good to know there's a purpose for our lives on earth? Like, that's a lot handier than walking around aimlessly, I think. I mean, it's good. It's good to know there's a reason why I'm not just, like, zapped out of existence on earth when I become a follower of Jesus. I'm here for a reason. But this, though, is when a lot of us start to worry. Because a lot of us like to think, I mean, a lot of us have problems putting an exclamation point there. It's more like, I have a mission. Instead of, I've got a mission. A lot of us don't like the exclamation point there. We get, a lot of times, worried about whether or not we can pull off the mission. But think about Mission Impossible agents. And I know during the summer we had a series on Mission Impossible, and so I'm not going to hammer on that too much. But think about a Mission Impossible agent when they hear the tape and it tells them what they're going to do and the message self-destructs. Do they go, oh man, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of hard. That'd make a really boring movie, right? Like, no one would watch the TV show if that's what it entailed. It's no, they go and do it even though it's hard. That's what makes it a cool story. That's what makes it cool, is that it's not just easy. It's a challenge, and that's why it's fun to watch. And maybe that's why it could be fun to do it, perhaps, our mission. And here's the thing, though, too. It's that anyone can do this mission. Anybody can do the mission that Jesus tells us to do. You don't need a degree from Bible college or seminary. You don't need to memorize half the Bible. You don't need perfect attendance on Sunday mornings. You actually don't even have to go to Sunday school or be in our life group. But don't tell anyone I told you that. You don't need these things. Those aren't prerequisites to go and do this mission. They are. Some of them are helpful. Some of them are really helpful. But you don't need them. They're not required for you to go on this mission. To prove this point, there's a story in John chapter 4 that I'm going to use for this purpose. It has a lot of other meanings to it and ways to talk about it, and you can preach 10 sermons on it. It's a very good story, but it's out of John chapter 4 and the woman at the well. I'm not going to have the verses on the screen because I'm going to kind of skip through the chapter and just read chunks. Read it at home on your own, though, to make sure that I'm not lying to you about what it says. And so there's your challenge to get you to try and read scripture, maybe. John chapter 4, I'll read some verse chunks out of this story to sort of give us a quick summary of the whole thing that takes place here. So John chapter 4, verses 1 through 3 is where I'll start. Now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize but only his disciples, he left Judea and departed again for Galilee. So he leaves one place and he's going to another place, and we learn that he has to pass through Samaria. Verse 7, a woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink, for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Now that's an odd thing, because one, it's a guy talking to a girl in public back in antiquity, which usually meant either he was related to her or he was propositioning her. That's like the two reasons why he talked to a girl in public back then. And also, he's talking to a Samaritan, and they're like half Jews that the Jews really hate and the Samaritans really hate the Jews, and they've been like having fraternity fights, like stealing each other's stuff, and like picking fights with each other for a very long time period here. And so why are you talking to me? One, I'm a woman, and two, you're a Jew, is what's going on here. In verse 16, they talk for a little bit, and let's skip to verse 16. Then Jesus said to her, go call your husband and come here. The woman answered him, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you're right in saying I have no husband, for you've had five husbands, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you've said is true. So now we learn that she also is not necessarily a woman of reputable character. They talk for a little bit more. Verse 27, just then his disciples came back. They marveled that he was talking with a woman, but no one said, what do you seek, or why are you talking with her? So the woman left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ? They went out of the town and were coming to him. Skipping a few more verses, verse 39, many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. And so what happened in that passage there is it said many people from that town came out and believed because why? Because of this woman talked to them, because an unclean half-Jew harlot who never read any of the New Testament, in fact, she didn't believe that most of the Old Testament was any good, and she went and just met Jesus like 10 minutes ago, and so obviously she can't explain the Trinity to anyone, and yet she just evangelized this whole town successfully, and they are coming out and believing in Jesus. It goes to show you don't need to like know everything about this. You don't have to like know what the word like superlapsarianism means or some other weird theological term. You don't have to know these things. You don't have to explain the Trinity. You can still go tell people about Jesus. You are a witness of what you know about him. And that's what she did, and it worked. Even though she wasn't qualified whatsoever to be like a Bible teacher. But a bunch of people believed because of what she said and did. So perhaps it could be possible for us too. In the middle of all of it, Jesus kind of explains why it works for her. She goes away and is talking to the town. He's talking to his disciples. And verse 35, it says, "Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for the harvest," Jesus says. He says, the fields are ready to be harvested. And that's why someone who doesn't have any like training in harvesting can go do it, because they're just ready. It's like walking through an apple orchard and the apples are like falling into your hands, is what Jesus is saying. The fields are ready for the harvest. They are good to go. And that banner in this room is a similar phrase that Jesus said, send out workers into his harvest. Here's the whole verse, Luke 10:2. And he said to them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out his laborers into the harvest." You know what that tells us? That tells us that the harvest is more ready than we're willing to go do it. That tells us that like it's ready to go, and if we just go try it, it's going to work, is what Jesus is saying there. Jesus is saying the harvest, it's good to go. It is plentiful, but we don't have any workers. People aren't going after the harvest. So pray to God to send out more laborers into the harvest. That tells us if we just try, something's probably going to happen there. And so it shouldn't be, oh, great, I guess I'm supposed to do something while I wait to die to go to heaven. Instead, it should be like, I've got a mission, and it's going to be successful, and the harvest is ready. This is going to be great. That's what it should be like instead. Now, here's some numbers to prove that the harvest is ready. This country apparently has 195 million people who just don't go to church anywhere. It's a pretty good number of people. Also, the fastest growing religious segment is people who believe in nothing. According to one poll in 1950, it was 15% of people believed in nothing. But according to this poll in 2010, 60% of people say the religious segment is just nothing. No affiliation with belief. And so we live in a mission field. We do. Did you know that actually other countries are sending missionaries to America? Like, we always think about like missionaries going out, but they're coming to us because this is like a ripe for the harvest mission here now. It is. That is pretty cool. Wouldn't it save a lot of resources for the kingdom if like we did that work instead of them having to travel here? I've got a lot of missionary friends actually, because I went to Bible college, so there's a whole program for training missionaries. And so I've got a lot of friends who I've learned from them that one of the big things you do as a missionary to another country, another culture, is you try and train other people to go evangelize and reach people, because they're never going to be as good as someone who actually lives there for real and grew up there. That could possibly be true of here. Perhaps the best people to reach those around you are the ones that you're already around. Like, perhaps it's you. You could be the best one to reach the people nearby and around you. So maybe Jesus was saying something right when he was talking to the disciples in Jerusalem and said, reach Jerusalem. So maybe he's telling us, reach the area you're around. Just thinking about it this way, Jesus said that the harvest is plentiful 2,000 years ago. Do you realize how much bigger the population is today than it was 2,000 years ago? Exponentially larger. Just in the last couple hundred years, the population just, it was doing this for throughout human history, and just recently it went, like, if the harvest was plentiful back then, it is really, really, really plentiful and ready to go now. It is way more plentiful. And so why isn't there a huge harvest going on then? Why isn't it happening? And Jesus said it's ready, but he also said, but the laborers are few. So that not a lot of people are going out and doing this mission is probably the problem. Granted, Ridgeview is a great body of believers. I really love it here, and I love you people here. But and what's cool is we're on track to baptize twice as many people this year as we baptized last year, which is, that's just cool in itself. But here's the thing. If the harvest is plentiful, even more plentiful than when Jesus said it was back then, why aren't we like reaping like crazy? Perhaps it's because we're not trying like crazy. We're trying much at all. Some of us here are trying. I'm not trying to tear people down who are trying, but a lot of us, I really don't think, aren't. And being witness, sharing the gospel, being a worker in the field, being salt and light on the earth, whatever metaphor you want to pick, because there's like 50 metaphors, but they all mean the same thing. What does that look like? What does that look like to go out and do that mission? And that's what we're going to talk about during the sermon series. Today is just the overview. And next week, we're going to start going through some steps of what it looks like. But here's some things I don't think it looks a whole lot like. I don't think it looks like leaving tracks instead of a tip. I actually think that's bad, really bad. I don't think it looks like breaking federal law and just like spamming people in their mailboxes without putting postage on it and filling invitations without making human contact. I don't think those things, non-human contact things, are what Jesus had in mind. Jesus actually illustrated the way to do these things throughout his life here, and we see that illustrated in the Gospels and what his followers did in some of the other biblical books. And so let's look at that biblical way and the way that Jesus did it, and let's try to see those ways and those methods. Let's actually follow him like we claim to do by doing what he did and what he says. And what does he say? It says these things on these walls. Acts 1:8, for example. Now, you will be my witnesses. Not you probably should be, but be my witnesses. And a lot of times we're witnesses without knowing it, so we should probably try to do it instead of not doing it well sometimes, just because we're being a bad witness as well. So what does that mean for us? That means that our mission field can be our own backyard. It means that it could be our street, it can be our neighbors, it could be our city, it could be our workplace, it could be our schools, because Jesus said, start where you are. Be around you are, be your neighbors. The harvest is ready. Pray for more harvesters. Jesus tells us to do that. The problem is it's really awkward to pray for harvesters if you're not willing to do it yourself. Like, because a lot of times God answers prayers in ways we don't expect. Like, if you pray for harvesters, he might be saying, okay, you're one. Like, that might be Jesus answering prayers to say, okay, be a harvester, might be one thing that God's answering prayer with. Now, I said that Bible college and Bible memorization, Sunday school attendance, those things are not prerequisites. There are not all these crazy prerequisites for going out and doing this mission. There is one prerequisite, though. There is one thing you have to do first before you can go out on that mission to be a witness for Jesus. There is a real requirement, and it's that first banner that I talked about, that come follow me. You actually have to be following Jesus. You have to know him to be a witness to him. But that's the only prerequisite, though. But to talk about that prerequisite and help us, anybody here who doesn't have the prerequisite yet, to talk about that, I want to ask a question that some of you might think is odd. And that's, did you know that I love the fact that hell exists? I think it's awesome that hell exists, which makes you all look at me funny. But think about it, though. The world is filled with really horrible things, and isn't it great that God made a place that they're all shoved and separate away from us for eternity? Like, isn't that good that, like, Satan gets locked up in hell forever? I'm happy about that. I don't know about you. Like, that's good news that at the end of the story, all the bad junk gets thrown in hell. That is good news. The not-so-good news, though, is that God loves us so much that he'll give us our wish. And we, a lot of times, every single one of us, in fact, that verse tells us that all have sinned and fallen short, we have all asked for the wish of being in a world away from God. And one day he's going to divide it so that he's here and everything else is there, and he's going to divide it up. And if you've asked for that wish, he's going to grant it to you to be in the world away from God. And that's where all the junk goes, because God's going to put all the bad stuff over here and he's going to stay with the great stuff. And if you've asked to not be around him, he'll say, okay, you don't have to be around me if you don't want. But when there's no good, the world's a pretty horrible place. I mean, we know what it's like with good, and yet we still see all these horrible things. Think of it without any good. And that's what hell is like. And so it's still honestly a good thing. It's still a good thing because it's a testament of God's love to us. One, he loves us so that he doesn't treat us like robots. And so we can choose to love him. But two, it also means that, hey, all the bad stuff's going to go away one day. That's good news. And that's part of the good news, I think. But the not so good news is what we've chosen, that every single person at some point has told God, you know what, I wish for a world that you weren't around. We all have with our actions. Some people have spoken it out loud, but a lot of us, it's with our actions or inactions or things such as that, just trying to disobey him and saying, I don't want your system, is what many of us have told, all of us have told God. But the great news, though, is that Jesus says, come follow me. And he says, I know the way to heaven, to not have to go to hell. I know that way, so come follow me. He's not going to hell. In fact, he's the only person who ever lived on this earth and didn't say, I don't want to be a part of God's system. He's the only person who did that. And so he knows the way, and he's willing to let us follow him to that way. Here's a video that gives a really good visual for this. Please pray with me. God, we want to follow you. Give us the strength to join in the mission of following after you and in the pursuit of you. We are sorry when we do not. Please give us the strength to do it anyway and continue on. We recognize that the fields are ready for the harvest. Every time there's something horrible in this world, we see another soul that's ready to be reached for by you. So let us be your body and your hands and your feet on this earth. Pray for those around us, maybe in this room who do not follow you, maybe those that we know, maybe they don't take following you seriously, but we ask for you to reach out to them and grab onto them and make their little harvest ready. Convince them that you're there. And let Ridgeview, its people, be your salt and light on this earth. We ask this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. The question at the end of that video is, will you follow Christ? To those who had never have before, consider starting now. The context of some of those phrases on these banners tells us that to follow Christ, you must repent, which means admit that you didn't choose God's system and try to follow his system now, and then be buried into water and come out of the water. And that's called baptism. And that's the definition of it, going in and out of the water like Jesus came in and out of the tomb. And that's how you unite yourself with him. And even Jesus was baptized in that way, so won't we want to follow after him? To those who already do follow him and have begun to follow him, take it seriously and realize that those who don't are missing out on Jesus, the way to the Father, the only one who can rescue us from hell. So follow Christ on his mission to save the world. Join in the mission. Be with us in the next few weeks as we dive.